does this really mean? The realistic part applies to the physics which go in there. It essentially means that all the relevant physics for the photosphere and the uppermost parts of the convection zone are included, which is MHD, equation of state with partial ionization, and three-dimensional radiative transfer. But since we have only limited computing resources, we cannot simulate the whole sun, we cannot simulate infinite time interval, and we cannot afford the resolution we really want. And that means that there are actually hidden parameters in boundary conditions, initial conditions, and the way unresolved scales are treated. In this talk, I will focus on two problems, sunspot fine structure and quiet sun magnetism, and what are the limitations of simulations. The first part about sunspot fine structure is just a very brief summary of what we understand and what we don't understand. This is a simulation which is now almost 2 years old, but it's still, so far of the simulated sunspots, the best looking one. It's a, about 50 megameter wide, 60 megameter deep box. The simulation was started from an axisymmetric field which I just dreamed up, roughly size of a sunspot, roughly field strength of a sunspot. It's important to impose the sufficiently strong inclination of the field at the top boundary. I come back to this, and it was run for about 6 hours. And I did a conversion study by exploring the resolution between something like 96 kilometers horizontal down to 12 and 32 in the vertical direction down to 8. And what we do understand fairly well is, in these simulations, the origin of fine structure. The key is overturning convection, and what it means is penumbral filaments are elongated convection cells. And this is shown here in this movie, which shows different quantities. You see here the intensity image, here the radial and vertical fields, inclination angle, the Evershed flow velocity, and here you see the vertical velocity field where you see these elongated convection cells. And that is very robust with resolution. You need something like at least 48 kilometers resolution, but then if you increase the resolution, nothing changes dramatically, just the Evershed flow speed increases. And on a very fundamental level, similar things are seen in a lot of different simulations, even if you go back in time. At that time, it might not have been that evident what it had to do with the penumbra, but if you look now backwards, where you roughly know how it works, is you see a lot of similar things, even in earlier simulations. Now, the part we don't understand that well is really what determines the radial extent of the penumbra, and why do we have a penumbra at all? This depends strongly on the top boundary condition. This is an experiment where each quadrant here is actually a simulation with a different top boundary condition. Here I imposed a potential field, and then I artificially increased the inclination. You get a better and better penumbra the more horizontally you make the field. With a potential field, there's essentially no Evershed flow, but then it jumps up if you make it stronger inclined. And you can also do experiments where you run a simulation, you switch back and forth between boundary conditions. That tells you something about time scales, and then you see that you can create and completely destroy a penumbra in about 30 minutes. But what this really means is not completely clear. For example, that with something like a potential field, you don't really get a penumbra at all. It could still mean that we have insufficient resolution to have a self-maintained penumbra, but there's no indication in these simulations. It might be an artifact of horizontal periodicity, since these boundary conditions assume that the corona is a periodic box, which it is not as far as we know. So what could we address here with ATST? One big topic is the observational evidence for the convective nature of the penumbra. It's an ongoing debate since about 5 years. It seems to be shifting towards more and more evidence for overturning convection, but it depends strongly on how data is analyzed, how it is interpreted. I think with having something like almost 8 times more resolution, that should definitely settle this issue. There's some disagreement in details when it comes to bright filament heads and dark lanes, which could be really related to a combination of resolution, initial state, and boundary conditions, and it's hard to figure this out without additional guidance, since when you change one of these things, you have to invest 1 million core hours to get a sunspot out of it, and then you see what else you want to change. That gets a very expensive investigation. And it's important to investigate this role of the top boundary condition. The basic question is the setup that leads to a penumbra in a simulation consistent with what the sun is doing? And what we need here is really try a model of a very well-observed sunspot where we try to constrain the initial state and the top boundary condition from observation. So we would need something like the magnetic field structure in the photosphere and also the chromosphere and perhaps lower corona, and set a model, create a model which is consistent with this, and then see if the penumbra you get in that model has the same extent and properties as the observed penumbra. Now I come to the second part about quiet sun magnetism. So these are magnetic convection simulations with no net flux. This is, of course, related to the small scale dynamo problem, which had been originally been studied in incompressible simulations here, inelastic simulations, and applied really in the solar context by Vogel and Schüssler. And people found that the uppermost few megameters of the convection zone act as a dynamo. But it was also found that the field strengths in these simulations typically fall short by a factor of 2 to 3 compared with Hinode observations. And the challenge here is really how strongly is the photosphere coupled to the rest of the convection zone, which translates to the bottom boundary condition in these simulations, and how to deal numerically with a regime where you have very high magnetic Reynolds number and fluid Reynolds number, but in addition to that, there's also a big separation between the magnetic and the fluid Reynolds number. And I present here an approach where I just make certain assumptions about this and then ask later, does it make sense or not? I use open boundary conditions, but I also allow for horizontal feed and inflow regions. It basically assumes that the deep convection zone is close to isotropic. And I use a large eddy approach, which means no physical viscosity, no physical magnetic diffusivity, all is numerical, just whatever is needed to keep the code stable. And this implies actually that the magnetic Reynolds number and the fluid Reynolds number are very close to each other. And this is an example of such a simulation in a small box, just 6 megameters wide, 3 megameters deep, intensity, vertical field at tau equal 1, field strength on a central cut to the box and inclination of the field. And this simulation reached something like a flux, unsigned flux of 80 Gauss in the photosphere. See field organized in a lot of thin sheets. And you see here in the downflow lanes a lot of very small bright points showing up. And if you go to smaller and smaller scales, of course, the time scale of evolution increases. Then the next thing to ask is, how robust are these results if you change the resolution? And here I repeated the same experiment with 5 different resolution levels from 32 kilometers down to 2 kilometers. And this is really comparing simulations which have a size where you can run it in principle on a workstation if you're a patient, going to simulations where you need at least 10,000 processors just to have enough memory to fit it into the machine. And what you can see is if you increase resolution, you get more and more small structures, of course, but on the large scale, they converge. If you look something here like the PDF of the magnetic field strengths, all of these curves, they line up very well. There is some realization noise at the strong field end. And you can also find 2 kilogauss in the quiet sun according to these simulations. And that is also seems to be very robust and not strongly dependent on resolution. And this is a measure of how much flux you find in these bright points. This is the fraction of the unsigned flux which is found in kilogauss feed concentrations. And you need a flux density of something like 40 Gauss, otherwise they don't show up, but then their fraction increases. So this looks very converged. The question is, does it converge towards the correct solution, meaning a solution which would have been computed with the correct viscosity and resistivity? Because these simulations, they all make the implicit assumption that the magnetic Prandtl number is close to 1 and not 10 to the minus 5. On the next slide, I will just show the 2 kilometer resolution, how the sun might look like at 2 kilometers resolution. And this is just a blow up of this square here. So this is roughly the size of a granule, 1.5 megameters. And you can find some extremely small bright points in there, which might be even difficult to see with ATST. If I show for exactly the same snapshot, the magnetogram, it looks like this. you get a lot of very thin sheets, very often opposite polarity nearby. Now this is cut off at 2 kilometers, and the real sun's dissipation length is 100 meters. So you could assume that this goes on. So something which looks unipolar here might be made out of 5 or 10 sheets of alternating polarities. What is the role of the bottom boundary condition? The bottom boundary condition plays a big role in setting the overall feed strength reached in these simulations, but in a certain range, somewhere between 30 and 80 Gauss unsigned flux at tau equal 1. The lower bound corresponds here to a simulation where the magnetic field was set to 0 in inflow region. That's the most conservative estimate you can do here, assuming that the entire convection zone is field-free except for the photosphere. The upper bound corresponds to a simulation where the RMS field strength increases with depth at the same rate as the equipartition field strength. This is the maximum you would expect. If those two cross at some point, you get into a regime which is not maintainable in the long run. And this just shows these profiles as a function of depth. The solid lines are the equipartition field strength. The dashed lines here are the RMS field strength. The blue lines correspond to this upper bound. The red lines to this lower bound. Now, if you look at Hinode data and do the forward modeling to determine how much flux you need to reproduce these simulations, you end up with something like 60 Gauss. That is quite sun excluding all network regions. You might exclude here a little bit too much, so it might be a little bit more, but it's very close to this upper bound where the RMS field strength increases with depth at the same rate as the equipartition field strength. This implies that the quiet sun magnetic field we observe is consistent with the convection zone, which is magnetized close to equipartition. And the small-scale dynamo just restricted to the photosphere is not enough to explain this. You need the connection to the deeper parts of the convection zone. You need dynamo action throughout the convection zone. And then you get into a regime where small-scale and large-scale dynamos are inherently coupled. You cannot easily distinguish between the two because you have a small-scale dynamo operating on all scales in the convection zone. At some point, these scales become so large that they're influenced by rotation, and then you make a smooth transition to a large-scale dynamo. And here I just show, again, similar setup. It's just everything scaled up by a factor of 4 just to show if you allow for larger scales in your system, you also see an organization of the magnetic field on larger scales. You see also a nice bipolar flux emergence which just decided to happen in this run. And if you increase the box even more and allow for supergranular scales, we also see an organization of this field on supergranular scales. So that brings me to the conclusions here. So what are the main open issues here? From a numerical standpoint of view, the question is really how to deal with this regime. And I'm not sure if we can get directly observations which tell us how to do this, because you really cannot observe the scales where this difference actually matters. Here I presented an approach which just assumed that magnetic Reynolds number and fluid Reynolds number are comparable. The results are numerical robust, there's so little resolution dependence that there's really no reason why one would run the simulations at any higher resolution. And what it implies is that these simulations are either correct or wrong in a very consistent fashion, and I hope that observations can tell us what's going on here. Another point, I didn't discuss it in this talk, but I would like to mention it, that there seems to be some disconnect by a factor of 2 between the strengths of quiet sun field derived from Zeeman and Hanley effect measurements. If you want to reproduce the Hanley effect values with these simulations, you have to push your simulation in a regime where the RMS field strength increases with depth faster than equipartition, and you also get too many bright points. The quiet sun look more like a plage region. With regard to the coupling between large and small scale dynamo, my opinion on this is that there's likely no clear separation. You cannot just explain the photospheric magnetism by having a small-scale dynamo just operating in the photosphere. You have to have the connection to the deeper parts of the convection zone. And the coupling can happen in 2 ways. The one is decay of active regions. That is what you can observe. But you also have field which is transported continuously up from the base of the convection zone with the convective motions. That's something which is not easy to observe and disentangle from feed which is locally generated. And with regard to the organization of feed on small scales, I would argue that you see likely more flux sheets than flux tubes, and there's also nothing special happening in 100 kilometers. You see sometimes argument where people say 100 kilometers is the preferred scale because of convective collapse. Recently, some people even argued there might be a secondary peak in the power spectrum. At least if these simulations are correct, there's nothing special happening around that scale. The only thing where 100 kilometers is special is it's in the spectral space, it's roughly the halfway. Half of the magnetic energy is on scales larger than 100 kilometers, the other half on scales smaller than 100 kilometers. Okay, thank you.
Hi, Matthias. That was a nice talk. I was curious from the point of view of comparing it with what Dave Bursick did, what the ratio of magnetic energy to kinetic energy was when the small-scale dynamo reached saturation in your calculations.
So it depends a little bit on the depth in the convection zone. I mean, you see it here. If you go closer down, it reaches close to equipartition, the photosphere, because of this big steep increase right here, the equipartition field strength is much higher up. So asymptotically in the deep convection zone, it's close to equipartition. But if you look in the spectral space, what you see is that you actually have a super equipartition regime on scales smaller than 100 kilometers. On larger scales, it's sub-equipartition.
Okay, but you can't say it's 10% or 25% of it.
I guess it's somewhere around 10%.
10%. That's what
in the photosphere. But if you go deeper down, it approaches close to equipartition.
Okay, thanks.
I really like this idea about coupling of large scale and small scale dynamo, and there is another mechanism which can give this coupling is magnetic helicity, because helicity is conserved. So did you compute helicity in your simulations?
No, these are simulations which don't have any rotation, so I wouldn't expect that there's any net helicity either of flow or magnetic field, but I didn't look at it.
Yeah, it should be. I mean,
I was struck by your comment about the Evershed flow and the potential field structure. So you tilt the field and it the flow starts. How to what extent are you permitted to do that by the vector field observations of the spot magnetic field? The reason I ask is there are radio observations of the gyroresonance, the field strength from gyroresonance, suggesting that the field really does have umbral intensities even at 10,000 kilometers, and so that would be sort of like a potential field, and you wouldn't have that freedom to flatten the field. So I'd be curious about how that works out.